welcome to the Business Success Club. I want to say welcome, and you are in for a treat in this group. Hey, thank you so much for tuning into this podcast. And on this podcast, what we really want to establish is this: how do hardworking entrepreneurs build profitable and scalable businesses whilst having the freedom and balance to do the other things they love, like family, vacations, sports, fun, adventures, and charity? So let's tune into today's podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Business Success Show. Mac Atram here, and I have a very special guest for you today. I'm going to introduce him to you in a moment. And on this show, as you know, we like to explore how do hardworking entrepreneurs build profitable and scalable businesses whilst having the freedom and balance to do the other things they enjoy and love, such as family, sports, fun, adventures, charity. And so today I have a very special guest, because there is more to life than just the daily hustle and grind. And I know, after catching up with this gentleman, and we'll give you our backgrounds in a moment, how we know each other, he shares very, very similar values to me. So he's an ideal special guest to have on this show today. And so I'm going to introduce him in a moment. But my special guest, his name is Richard Moore. Now, Richard originally worked 60 hours a week in the city of London. So he was a city man before deciding to build his own businesses and help others do exactly the same. Now, after building companies from the trenches up by taking ownership of the sales teams, coaching leadership roles, and consulting with multi-£100 million organizations, very large corporations, Richard created his own company to help others get massive traction as they launch their businesses. Now, as he did this, Richard invested many of the companies he helped to create. He invested in them and shared with the world his views on business through the weekly live Q&As he runs online. He's an expert in sales and an expert specifically in the area of LinkedIn and how you can use LinkedIn to generate more clients, more prospects, and actually make more money utilizing that particular platform. He's been doing this for over 17 years. So he's an expert in that particular area. As you know, we only interview experts on this show. Now, he's got a lot more to share with us, but he's been featured in Forbes, the Huffington Post, Inc. He's been featured in Thrive, Influencive, and Humans 2.0 podcast, and many, many more. So with no further ado, please welcome our very special guest on today's podcast, on this show. His name is Richard Moore. Richard, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into doing what you do.
Thank you, Mac. That was one hell of a great introduction for me. I feel like I shouldn't say anything, because you're doing a better job of describing me than I would. Thank you so much, mate. It's so good to be here. It's an interesting background, because for many people, they kind of sport the rags to riches approach, but I actually was doing quite well in the city. However, for me, it was a case of saying, I need to have something else. I always harbored this desire to run my own thing and be very much the designer of what my week looks like. So after about 10 years in the city, you're right, I started about 17 years ago, very much in the sales space. So selling online marketing back in 2002, all the way through to events and things like that. So very much operating in the marketing and promotion kind of space, but always in the sales side. I eventually left a sales director role in the city in kind of about 10 years after, and started my consulting as well as a Taekwondo Academy, you know, because you've got to keep busy, right? But I'm really looking forward to this, because I think not enough podcasts and interviews look at the really important definition of what success is. And I think definition of success shouldn't just be you're making multiple hundred thousands a year or multiple millions a year. It's all well and good, but you're not really successful, are you, unless you've done something meaningful with your family and for your body and for your head and all of that kind of thing in a day. Yeah. And I believe that that's where that kind of multifaceted broad view of success is a place I'm very pleased to feel I'm really inhabiting at the moment. And so that's why I feel that this is very exciting. And yes, you're right, I work very much not just with sales and the science and the psychology around the behavior there, and coach specifically that with corporates and all the way down to startups. but I also focus on LinkedIn. The last couple of years has really been an exciting place to operate. And so I coach people in my accelerator on that as well. So much to talk about, but yeah, I really am looking forward to it.
Good, I'm really looking forward to this interview as well. Richard, why don't we start here? Because it's very rare I'm able to catch up with someone from 10 or 15 years before we knew each other in a different realm, in a different environment to now. So just give our listeners and viewers here how we know each other.
So we know each other because it probably was 15 years ago or so, I would say. We used to train in Taekwondo together in Usley in West London. We would wake up, or it would be, I think, a Sunday morning, black belt training. I think we were both first or second downs or something. And we would, I remember well, we would often train in Hayes as well. There would be a run in the morning and then we would do brutal training. And it would be a very early start. I remember, in fact, when I first started training with you, I was living in South London in Clapham. So I was getting night buses to train. But you know, things like that are really defining because they help you learn what it is to get up and make the most of the day. And I remember so well, I would often come home around lunchtime on a weekend. I think it was a Saturday, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure. And it would be like, I've really put a shift in this weekend and let the weekend begin now, but look what I've already done behind me. But it was great to train with you. And, you know, those were really important years in exploring ourselves, going for those belts together, that kind of thing, going for tournaments together, doing nationals, doing international events as well. Great days. So it's so nice to see you again.
That's it. Yeah, we... Absolutely. You know, when I saw you doing that, your work, and I thought, oh, I didn't realize that's what you do when you're not doing Taekwondo, and you've expanded and done, obviously done a lot more. And we shared, at one point, we shared the same Grandmaster mm-hmm. Trevor Nichols. And obviously, you was under the instruction of Master Johan de Silva now. Mm-hmm. So it's great to train with you in that aspect. How would you say martial arts training or Taekwondo training has shaped or influenced your life to now? You know, you mentioned about having the discipline to wake up, go and train, really feel it. How do you think it's shaped you as a in character, in virtue, as a person?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, because it is quite a multifaceted art. People who aren't aware think that martial arts and specifically Taekwondo is just fighting. And of course, there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
The word in there that you've said is absolutely on point, is discipline. And what's really interesting is that although I moved through belts and things like that and became a black belt, my weak area was sparring. So I could kind of hold my own. But if you remember, you and I were trained by a grandmaster, or at the time a master, but like he's still a seventh or eighth dan. The guy's, he was legendary
worldwide, yeah.
And we trained, Mac and I trained with world champions. We trained with fourth dans and fifth dans.
Yeah.
And what I learned was really like where my vulnerabilities are. And I learned that this is an area I needed to get strong in. And it's interesting, people think that I remember at the time, a lot of people would say, you know, oh, you're a black belt. That must mean you're like, you can dodge everything, you never get hit. I was like, no, when you're a black belt, it means you're used to getting hit in the face. You defend it, sure, and you're used to getting kicked and things, but the point is when you get hit down, you get up, and you're used to what that feels like. So I loved personally the discipline in the technical side as well, so the pattern work and the kind of the minutiae about around destruction, so breaking boards and things like that, really learning how to use my body a lot. And without Taekwondo, I wouldn't have leveraged sport and my body to drive my mind. I would have had to rely on something else instead. And like many people there, I've had other moments of adversity in my life that have really disciplined me and trained me and made me who I am, and made me grateful and give me the right kind of perspective on things. But I think this because of Taekwondo, I knew I could start, after a while, I could start backing myself physically. And that's certainly a reason why I started going into the direction of more extreme things and saying, like, why can't I run a marathon then? Let's do a marathon as well. And building on for that, this weekend I'm going away with friends to do a 50-mile ride in the, wow, in the Chiltern. So it'll be a bit of a hilly, a punchy ride we've put together. But the point is, like, you don't explore that kind of thing unless you really have a sense of what you're capable or not. Mm. So I really liked that I learned what it felt like. It sounds weird, but learn what it felt like to be hit hard and have to dodge and have to react and things like that. Because those moments where you have to be so switched on and aware of everything around you and remember your training, it really brought a lot to me. And my mind is so strong and focused as a result of that kind of training. But it's only because we were training so many times a week. We trained hard, many times a week. And that built that kind of muscle memory, didn't it?
Fantastic. I agree with you totally. I agree with you totally on that. Because for me also, it's about the discipline, like you said, but also being very present and focused. Because on the mat, if you're not present or focused, you will get smacked in the face. And it's a wake-up call. And I say to people often that, same in the marketplace. If you're not present in the marketplace, you will get smacked in the face.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
and I was saying for years, talking to business owners and helping them that, stay focused on what you're supposed to be doing. Be flexible. Be ready to move and shift. Don't be fixed. And as soon as the COVID situation hit, they started realizing what I'm talking about. Because things change, right?
That agility is so important. And agility in the moment, especially with companies that grow, is everything. And it's wrong for the large businesses to say, well, we're a big company, there's a lot more to it. It's wrong because there are large businesses that are still agile. And it's about how you're set up for these things. And look, like, we're both old enough to have experienced 2008 as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I remember that really well. And it's like, does no one learn? You know, every 10 years or so, there'll be another one. Absolutely. It will happen. We'll do something as people in another 10 years. That'll be the next thing. So you need to expect it. And I remember really well, I shared a video about a year or so ago calling this, not the pandemic, but saying, you know, we're doing really well. Life is quite straightforward. It's such a long time in our memory since the big crack 2008. Do the test. Like, imagine you lost imagine something happened. We had a major solar flare like we did 150 years ago and all communications knocked out. How's your business doing now? Like, the unthinkable. People are like, yeah, but that won't happen. Really? But no one thought this would happen. So absolutely. Are you ready? Are you agile enough? Are you diverse enough? You know, are you relying on one stream of income where you have to be present, or do you have other things backing you up? As a father and a husband now with people who rely on me, if I'm taken out of the equation, what does that look like? Those kind of questions. And if you don't have that kind of ecosystem, imagine then thinking about the people who work for you. They have families and they have livelihoods. And if you get taken out of the equation, what happens to them? So how robust are you as well as the business? I really think it's very relevant. You're absolutely right.
Fantastic. Thanks for that. You know, as I said, we shared a lot of values. I love what you said earlier on about success and what success means to you. It's more than just about the money in the bank account or the wealth. It's what you do with your day. And it seems like you've structured your... let me just go into a bit more about how do you structure your day and week to have a balance, or what you classify as success for you?
Absolutely. I totally have learned the hard way over the years that if you don't plan your day, you are missing out on all the productivity you could have. I have very robust schedule every day, because if you don't design your day and your week, then you are being led by things that can impact you and affect you. I like to take control and be the master of what happens throughout my week. And some things should be mandatory. Sure, selling and closing deals. People naturally feel that that should be the focus of it. Yeah, but why are you not making mandatory time with your wife, or cooking, or looking after the children, things like that? So I remember when I left the city thinking, you know, I moved to this place where I was like gray skin, yellow eyes. Often it was 80-hour weeks. I would sometimes call my wife and say, I'm not going to come home tonight. I'm just going to grab a hotel around the corner. because I have this strange logic that if I worked hard, it would be a good idea. And you know, I remember thinking like, this is an absurd way of living. No amount of money. I remember thinking also, if they tripled the money, this isn't worth it now because I'm just slaving myself. And this was only at like 29, 30 years old. So really designing the things that matter, because the truth is we do have time if you force it. And I used to be a night person working really late and being tired, then that affected my next day. And I remember thinking this has to be holistic. So now it's 5 o'clock every morning, which means an earlier night, but 5 o'clock every morning, because I want to get exercise in. So without fail, like breathing in and out, I get up and I exercise every morning. And that will start with yoga. And then there is then there are sit-ups and press-ups and arm curls and all this kind of stuff. And it's a routine that my personal trainer has helped me with. And it literally happens every day before I'm out of pajamas, before I have a glass of water, before I have breakfast, that happens. But I make sure that all of this process is something I'm in control of. So the biggest, you know, drug and addiction we have at the moment is mobile phones. Mm. That phone simply doesn't get used until a time where I decide it gets used. So once I've done the activity, still no breakfast yet, I now sit in front of my laptop. I welcome the day in. In the summer, it was lovely. I'd sit in the garden and the sun would rise, and that is a little chilly for it now. But yeah. you'd sit there and day, like the first thing I'd do is I'd write down like, what are the things I'm working towards this week, this month, this quarter, even the next 10 years, write them down, just keep reminding myself why I'm up this early where everyone's fast asleep. What am I feeling right now? Like a bit of cheerleading. What was good yesterday? There's a sale that came in, or there's a great moment where I just did an extra press up, or there was a great thing that my daughter did, or whatever it might be. But then I schedule the day, and every single thing is nailed down. I schedule when I'm eating. I'll schedule when I'm going to spend time with my family. And people think that's robotic, but if you don't schedule time with your family, you don't end up doing it because you take for granted that they're going to be there. So it sounds weird, but you schedule time for a bit of spontaneity. It's an hour of whatever happens. It might be a board game or playing horsey in the living room, but whatever it is, it's like it's already in there. And it means that you can then run the day with flexibility built in to know what's going to happen. And I love that because it gives me this sense of control, whilst at the same time I can make sure I do things I want to do. So the thing to add in there is just deciding what days you need to have as focus, real focus days. So like on Monday, I'm reasonably light with my client work because I need to set up my week. I like that process. And some people might be like, you could get more out of the day, you could speak to more people, but it's choice. That's the point, you know, and you decide when you're going to finish each day and so on. So I have certain times when I have calls with people, I have certain times when I'm in a closed period when I'm doing reading or when there's a power nap and things like that. It's a liberating experience, ironically, by giving yourself more focus to do. And the productivity is insane then. You get what you would get done in, you know, if you're three people when you schedule things properly. So I just make sure I've got a bit of everything. You know, yesterday, 11 a.m., I remember I had a bike ride. And it's like, this is what it's about. Like, this stuff doesn't get forgotten. It's just as mandatory as an interview with Mac Attram.
There you go. So I love it. It's more of a holistic way of living. And I endorse that totally. It's funny, we haven't spoken about that, but your morning routine is very similar to my morning routine. Take out yoga, add martial arts if you like. But it's very, very similar. And I love what you said. I've had clients in the past who said this to me, that, Mac, but all this structure you're showing me and how to structure my day and all that, it doesn't give me much freedom. And I said, test it out and see what happens. Because structure actually gives you more freedom, not lack of freedom, not less freedom. And it may seem robotic, but actually you have a fuller and more holistic life. So I love what you just shared with that. Thank you. So let's move on to LinkedIn. I want to talk about sales. I want to talk about LinkedIn. We all know a bit about you now, family. You've got two kids, right?
That's right. Two daughters. That's right.
Okay, good. And you've been married for how long now?
11 years on the 14th of November. So not long to go till the big celebration.
11 years.
crazy. Next month. Yeah, next month.
Congratulations. Congratulations. And you just turned 40 last week.
Literally a week ago. Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm feel good. I feel like I'm 27 still. I don't know why. You just kind of, you get off the train of how old you actually are.
Yeah.
And you start feeling the way you do. But I look after myself. I'd like to think. And so, you know, it's, I feel like it's pretty young still. It's all good.
It's very good. I mean, you don't look 40, but very, very good. Very good for you. So what our audience are going to be interested in now is LinkedIn strategies. For those who are not on LinkedIn or maybe they've got a profile there, not realizing they can use it to attract prospects and clients and leads, etc. What can you say, or what strategies can they, or what can they start doing? If you've got any helpful hints or tips, that would be great as well.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because the main majority of people probably perceive it in the same way. LinkedIn started, 2002? And we all join LinkedIn. We all probably have a profile. But the feeling tends to be, oh, yeah, that's like where you have a profile and basically recruiters are there sharking around all the time. Well, actually, no. And quietly, there's been this kind of big revolution happening. I don't know if many people know that Microsoft bought them for $26 billion a couple of years ago. It was a major genius move by Microsoft. And in 2017, in August 2017, they flicked the switch on being able to add videos. So interesting, because it started to become the potential for a content play. And the strategy starts with a very crucial statistic that people need to be aware of, that you will not get anywhere else. Even with TikTok going crazy, even with the number of users of Facebook, what you've got with LinkedIn is something very special, because 706 million people are on that platform. That's been growing quite rapidly because it's starting to become more relevant again because of lockdown and things like that. In addition, the thing you do on LinkedIn culturally is you have a profile, but you don't do anything, right? You just kind of leave. That's what majority of people do. On TikTok, the thing you do is you post videos. On Facebook, you post images or whatever it might be. You can do status updates, and that's been something you've always been able to do. But the major win is that it's been a sleeping giant.
Yes.
Basically, every person you will ever do business with is already on it. Now, there's hundreds of millions of these people. And if you can imagine this metaphor of going to, say, a theater, imagine it being packed with people who are decision makers watching the spotlight on a stage. And imagine there's no one on the stage. If you step onto the stage, you make a bit of noise. It's basically there's silence except from you. That's the main difference between LinkedIn and all the other platforms, because every week there's close to 10 billion views of content.
Okay.
Messages, videos, whatever it might be. But less than 3 million people, so less than 1% of users, actually share anything.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes. Now, we feel that LinkedIn is stuffed full of content creators.
Hmm.
Because, of course, LinkedIn fills in our news feed all the time with posts. That doesn't mean it's full. It just it's just what's current for us. But relative to all the other platforms, you have silence. It is basically silence. They've changed things recently, but up until a big algorithmic change a couple of months ago, I would trend 3-4 times a week for hashtag sales.
Okay.
Hashtag marketing. Go try that on Twitter. No chance, because it's too competitive. And so you've got something similar on TikTok because you've got so much attention, right? And loads of impressions and views of this kind of content. But the difference with LinkedIn is that it's the C-suite and it's the decision maker. Mm-hmm. The people who own the budgets in business, which is why it's the number one business to business platform. But where you can win, this is the kind of strategy here, is recognize that unless you're actively looking for work, in which case, sure, your profile might read more like a CV or resume.
Yeah.
Instead, you need to look at this as a form of attracting people to your profile. So the process is really simple. Number one is, forget that people are going to be searching and finding you through search. People don't look on search that much unless they're recruiters trying to hire you. No one's likely to write coach and then spend thousands of pounds with someone they don't know, right? They don't do it that way. If you look at it behaviorally, what happens is when people want to spend premium, they need warming up. which is why there's this show, for example, is why you have all of the content you put out. It's to naturalize someone to what it's like to, say, work with Mac. And when they feel right, then they feel like you're approachable, they'll come to you. So it's the same here with content. If you were to post content that sends out what I call a pure signal about the space you work in and, you know, the problems you solve, you give great value, you help people out. And of course, you help to reframe any mainstream beliefs that are maybe myths about your topic area. You say, you know, this is a new way of looking at it. People are going to start thinking, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. So positioning yourself as expert through content. And look, you can post once a day, 3-4 times a week. That's all you really need to do. You don't have to go crazy. What happens is the generous algorithm that basically says we've got all these people watching very little content means that you naturally and organically, without spending money, tend to do disproportionately well compared with other social platforms in getting people to look at your content. And when people look at your content, if you think about how the human animal behaves, someone who's interesting basically stimulates one of our best types of leverage in sales persuasion, which is human curiosity. If someone's curious socially, then what do? After we've met that person, we check out their Instagram or their Facebook. We go for a little stalk, and it's no different here. Who's this guy, Mac? What's going on there? Or who's this guy, Richard? This bit of content's interesting. Click on his name. And now we're on the profile. So the play actually is content as gravity to bring people into orbit around you. And then they naturally click onto your profile. That's how you stimulate thousands of views of your profile per month. Then your profile shouldn't be entrepreneur, because what does that tell people? It's the problem that you help people solve, you know, like help the fact that these people are coming to you, probably fairly interested in what you're about. Then an about section with a call to action, all the good stuff. And that's how you start this process of warming people, but also converting as well. So the clients I work with mostly need help with LinkedIn, and the moment of getting someone who's interested in looking at them, pivoting them to a potentially interesting conversation. And that kind of elegance in the way you message them and the way you speak to these people and moving them to this position where you maybe have a phone call or something, is it's important to master. But it's crazy the amount of talent out there, small business owners, entrepreneurs. And remember, we're all stuck at home as well. We can't go to business events anymore.
Yeah.
Aren't broadcasting on this platform where no one relatively is speaking in front of an audience that will see. It doesn't make sense. And like, without trying that hard, by posting about once a day, so nothing aggressive, I got over 1.5 million views of content last year.
That's fantastic.
In the last 12 months. And like, that's just, but I'm not this huge mega influencer. I just show up every day or so. So don't wait. This is the same. This is like a metaphor for what we should be doing anyway. You don't sit back and wait for people to come to you. Get down from your throne. Go get the audience. So just, you know, if you have something valuable to give people, we'll then share it. And it's amazing. You know, you'll get 6 likes on a Facebook post, and then you get 300 on a LinkedIn post. Just that time, this time won't happen again. These are the golden years now, like YouTube 10 years ago. Yeah. You know, like Instagram a few years back as well. This is where it's straightforward. And you know, they've caught up so much. They rolled out about 2 weeks ago LinkedIn stories. That's how much they've caught up. Yeah, it's like Instagram as well. So it's not in the UK until like in a couple of weeks, I'm afraid. It's in the US. But the point here is that everything you could do elsewhere, you can go live and everything, you can do on LinkedIn. But in the next 3 years, the marketers will start really showing up. And there's that saying, isn't there? Marketers ruin everything. So what we've got right now is that opportunity that won't happen again to genuinely fill your boots. And I'm saying with authority, because I'm seen as one of the early starters of this, but I only did it 2.5 years ago. And the mega influencers, the big ones, obviously other than Bill Gates and that, but the ones who are really doing, the entrepreneurs and the content marketers who are seen as the apex players, they're like a few 100,000 followers. That's it. This is how early we are. So the opportunity is immense. And I urge people to jump in there. It's just amusing when people in business aren't doing anything with LinkedIn. It's kind of the most intuitive thing. But it's purely because it's cultural. We've been conditioned that LinkedIn is just for recruiting and resumes.
Oh, and
I love that it's quietly changed over the last couple of years. So it's an immense I'd put most of my stock in LinkedIn at the moment.
Thank you for that, Richard. Richard, what would you say to someone who is just, I don't know if the word's afraid, but they just have this reluctance to publish or to broadcast what they do and who they are on any social media, let alone LinkedIn, but they are looking for business?
It's a really good point. The good news first is you don't have to sell on your content, because everyone gets scared off. And no one's interested in being sold to directly, because, you know, that's too cringy. It's more relaxed than that. We would never buy from anyone we don't want to buy from. So we need to get relationships going. That's the point. But what I would say to someone who's nervous or scared of doing it is, you need to remember that if anyone would ever work for you, then, or sorry, work with you or buy your service, they need to have a sense of what you stand for. What are your values? How do you see your world and so on? Don't you think they'd ask that anyway if you ever get on a phone call with them? So if that's the case, well, why wouldn't you broadcast the very same values and beliefs you have about your area of work on LinkedIn? Because your ability to then attract more people is greater. And so it's what you're going to do anyway. And this is what I say, because I do a lot of lecturing at universities as well. I was early this week with Warwick University. So you've got these students who are in a similar boat, many of them. They're like, I'm fearful of posting on LinkedIn. You know, I feel like I should keep my head down. But what you've got to remember is, if you're going to get hired, you're only going to get asked questions. What do you think about the state of the economic uncertainty we've got in the UK right now, says the interviewer? So why aren't you posting that? You know, if you're reading the Financial Times, reading The Economist, you're reading Forbes, what's your opinion? And what's really crucial is that very quickly, I'm talking about only weeks and months, if you can establish that you have an opinion on things and start conversations, don't just contribute to them, but start conversations and host the party, people very quickly, mostly because of a lack of competition on this platform, very quickly start seeing you as something of an authority. Do people know more about sales than I do? Sure, they might do, but I'm the only one talking about it half the time. And sure, there are others as well. But as we know, it's not down to your knowledge or experience, it's how much someone digs you, because this is a human sport, isn't it? So the next guy along who talks about sales as well might be saying the same thing as me, but someone who just likes my vibe or is into red hair or loves the English thing, they'll go with me. And that's just how business often works. So I do think that you should try it. And if you don't try it, you will never know. And I think that kind of the biggest takeaway of all this stuff is, it's the same as when you learn to ride, or that same when you were on top of a diving board learning to dive for the first time, or walk even. You know, it's nerve-wracking, but you know after doing it a few times, you're fine. You're fine, because you get the hang of it, and it doesn't get it's not nerve-wracking, and no one comes out of the woodwork and throws comments at you and trolls you. And in fact, LinkedIn is very much seen by the community as one of the most positive places to be posting. Obviously, there are always trolls and people and things like that, but far less than the likes of Facebook. It's been, I totally agree as well. You tend to find it's a very positive, supporting community. So there's no better place of doing it, in my opinion.
That's very good. It's good way to put it, actually. What is the biggest difference, would you say, between LinkedIn and some of the other platforms that people may use in business? So we've got Instagram, the YouTube, we've got Facebook page, if you like, or Facebook. And then we've got LinkedIn, as well as Twitter. Nice. Now, someone said to me, and actually I was reading something, and they said the purpose of Instagram is for people to look at photos and video. You know, that purpose, it was a photo sharing app. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's right.
The purpose of YouTube is your TV station.
Yeah.
YouTube, broadcast, TV type stuff. What's the purpose of LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think what's the best way to look at it is I class a lot of the social platforms as pure social. So Facebook's got built into its algorithm that if you try and explain anything businessy or promotional, it's just going to get throttled. That kind of content doesn't go out, because it should be, hey, here's a picture of me at my friend's wedding kind of thing. So it's built into LinkedIn. And again, the context is in our culture now that LinkedIn is where work is done and business is done. So it is more embraced to speak about business on LinkedIn. People show up, one way of putting it, some people say, is people show up to LinkedIn more likely with a credit card in hand than on Facebook. Shop on Facebook to check out what the latest is with your friendship group, with Instagram for inspirational photos, as you're absolutely right. Twitter is like the water cooler. So what's someone thinking right now? And that's got that immediacy. And I love that description of YouTube being like a TV station. But LinkedIn is where people go with a business head on. The thing to remember is that we're all humans first before we are our job title. So what you find is that literally the same person who is viewing each of these platforms in different ways will be, you know, the senior partner at an accountancy firm on LinkedIn. But remember as well, and this is where business is getting wrong on LinkedIn, that although it has the context of being the business focused platform, it still is inhabited by humans. And this is crucial. Hey, look at my white paper will fail. Because no one wants to look at your white paper when they're taking a break from their work to look at their newsfeed. What you need to use, this is where you do draw threads from the other platforms, is the principles of attraction and of persuasion and of pattern interrupting to get people to go, huh, what's this here? So well-written copy that makes someone stop the scroll and say, this is interesting. Something that is akin sometimes to Instagram does work really well. You know, what works well in video right now on LinkedIn is the square meme selfie style videos. And people are saying, well, it's not the place for it on LinkedIn. But actually, if humans respond best to that, humans respond to not having to think too much, you know, yeah. Brain takes the path of least resistance. So when you've got a nice fat headline that says really clearly without overwording it exactly what your point is and stops the scroll and interrupts this pattern and makes the subconscious processing part of the brain go, hang on a sec, that's interesting, that's different. Well, then you're accessing, you're tapping into the human animal, which is what guards and decides what we do throughout the day anyway. So in the same way as you flick through Instagram, go, ah, that caught my eye, and then engage consciously, it's no different on LinkedIn. So people fail when they go weird and throw like a white paper or some corporate video down the neck of cold audience of people who are like, but who are you? Why should I watch this? So same principles are there, and it's really crucial to remember that if you don't stop someone and make them think and want to engage, then no one's going to read whatever you say. So it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's that dichotomy in place there. It's a very different world, but it also requires you to recognize you're still speaking to humans first, job titles second.
Fantastic. I love all that you've been sharing. Hey, listen up, Business Success Show. I'm live here with Mr. Richard Moore, family man, entrepreneur, LinkedIn sales expert. And so you should be listening to what he has to say. Now, we've been exploring the subject of success. We've been exploring the subject of discipline, taekwondo, martial arts, family, and now obviously talking about LinkedIn and LinkedIn strategies. Yep. Now, for those who don't know, for those who are spending thousands and thousands of pounds or dollars on Facebook advertising, could they transition into, if all these business owners they are after, whether it's a business to business or whatever, they're after other humans. And could they do the same on LinkedIn? Does it work? Do they have, does LinkedIn have the same kind of thing?
Yeah, it has an ad platform. So LinkedIn makes its money in two ways, as opposed to Facebook's one way of ads. So it uses subscriptions, so like your premium or sales navigator or recruitment packages that people can have to access it. And indeed ads as well. You can, it depends obviously on the business. If you're a B2C kind of business, it makes a lot more sense to leverage Facebook, which of course allows you to tap into Instagram as well because they own them. But yeah. I think with LinkedIn ads, are they as effective? Not as much. However, you're still accessing thousands of people at an immensely good value for money, as opposed to many years ago when you'd have to do a leaflet drop or some nonsense like that. But the question of if you need to is there. If I go post something business related on Facebook, I better be willing to put my hand in my pocket to pay for it. Otherwise, I will get like basically zero, right, in terms of engagement. Facebook pages get nothing unless you pay for it. Correct. Whereas with LinkedIn, the question right now is why bother with an ad? Because here's my view. Again, we're looking at psychology here. When was the last time you saw sponsored and went, oh, yeah, I'll click on that then? Because you know now that it's not just clicking on it and seeing what's there. You have to make that decision, which we've all been conditioned to understand now. If I click on this, I'm going to get a month of ads about this thing. Like, do I want to click on that? And there's a level of distrust about something that's been paid. Ads don't get the same view as something native, right? That's why we all whip our phones out when there's an ad break in a TV show, like, because our commercials will focus on something else. Sure. So the question is, why do you need to? Because right now, it's so strong in organic, and I would outperform in my organic engagement and traffic on LinkedIn what I could get for paying for ads on Facebook.
Right.
Now, I've been at it for a while, so let's be clear. Yeah. But the algorithm is affectionately known as the Robin Hood algorithm right now. What that means is it actively takes bandwidth, that's people viewing content, from the very biggest influencers and actually gives it to the beginners, the ones starting out, to reward them for trying it. So that's why you get people posting their first video and sometimes getting thousands of views in a 24-hour period on it, because it's trying to get people stimulated in using it. And, you know, I remember when they released their document feature recently, which is just uploading a PDF, I got like 100,000 views in a day. It was insane, because they're just giving you lots of a bandwidth so you can try this stuff out. Again, people won't realize the opportunity as usual until it's passed. In 5 years, honestly, we will be all reminiscing about the golden days of LinkedIn, honestly, and without question, it's crazy to not try. So that's your answer. It's like, you could use ads. Yes, you can tap into people, but you can attract them with organic very effectively. And I think that's something to really consider. At the very least, I think the big takeaway is you're mad if you're running a business and not trying something on LinkedIn.
Well, you heard it first. You heard it from Richard Moore right here. So before we finish off in the next few minutes, I'm going to say this. If you could summarize in maybe five tips, someone who's not used, they've got a profile on LinkedIn, but they're not utilizing it to attract the clients who are sitting on LinkedIn, what are the top 3, 4, 5 things they should do right now?
So firstly, speak, make a noise. Okay. You could get away with even just 3 posts a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, post something. It doesn't have to be video. It doesn't have to be all polished. In fact, what gets great distribution is just the written word.
Okay.
Another tip is don't share content. This sounds weird, right? You think that should be a nice thing that's well rewarded. If you share other posts from elsewhere, or if you even share other people's content, so if someone wrote a lovely post about you and I wanted to share it, that is a bad idea. The reason why is LinkedIn actively kills posts where there is a share or a link. The reason why is because why would it send traffic to something that's sending traffic elsewhere? It wants to reward someone who's creating some content that's like native and makes people dwell on it and write on it. So, and write comments and so on. So think about that. Write your own content. Don't just regurgitate others, because they're already sending traffic there anyway. Right. And also that won't help with positioning you as an expert. Another thing I would say is dress up your profile a bit better. If you don't have a cover image, it's crazy. Get an Unsplash, get a free image that speaks about the kind of thing you do, or have an image if you've got one professionally taken. Decent headshot as well. That's kind of straightforward. But think about what people genuinely need to know when they come onto your profile. The likelihood is, if you're using content to drive interest in you, someone who might buy from you, when they land on your profile, they don't care what your job title is. They don't care if you're a director or a head of marketing. That doesn't mean anything, because what we all know is a head of marketing could be 24 years old and manage no one, or could be running a £100 million budget. It doesn't mean anything. Instead, there's a simple formula I use, which is, I help X achieve Y using Z. I help X being the type of people you serve, achieve Y, the outcome you give them, using Z, the device you use. So for me, I help consultants get clients using LinkedIn. And so the person who arrives on my profile who could use my service, like, good, I know what he's about then. Right. Just like that question, that makes sense, right? So then your about section could be there as well. Fourth thing I'd say, I think it's the fourth one, is use calls to action in your content and in your about section, your bio. A call to action is like a signpost or a suggestion or a nudge that someone should act. Intelligent, grown up, educated business people still need to be shown where to go. Right. If you just hope telepathy will work, it doesn't really work. It's not a good strategy. So when you write a post, LinkedIn will heavily distribute your post and spread it around if you're stimulating conversation. It massively rewards comments, yes shares and yes likes, but comments are what drive interaction. So on your profile, tell them where they can connect with you. Like send me a message if you'd like this, or send me an email here, or go to this website. It's crazy how people forget that. But on the content, always ask yourself before you click on post, am I stimulating a conversation here? Because if you make a statement, good for you. But then if no one says anything, LinkedIn will say, no party over here, then we'll just kill the traffic. Right. And at best, LinkedIn, to what happens when you post something, it tests with about 5% of your audience if anyone's showing any interest. Which leads to the final point, which is work with your community and your audience. What you need to think about is when you post something, you should go out there and tell people you've posted something. Meaningfully, don't spam them all. But like DM, if I was to write something about business acceleration or about aspiring to excellence or accumulating more wealth, I would want to write a tag, do a tag to you and say, hey Mac, I know you're big in this space and understand it. What do you think about this?
Okay.
Awesome. It's what's your opinion? So if you can stimulate discussion, conversation, that's what makes these posts rocket. You want to go viral, get people commenting. And so always end that post with, even if something as simple as, what's your opinion? What do you think? Have you experienced this? You know, tag someone who does the same, whatever it might be. Because the more people who show up, the more LinkedIn will go, wow, and then they'll just push it out. And that's how you get crazy amounts of distribution. And of course, then they come check you out and great opportunities come from there.
Wow, is all I can say. That's fantastic. Well summarized, well put. Fantastic. Richard, how can people get hold of you, interact with you, ask you questions, continue the conversation with you?
It'd be a bit weird if I didn't say LinkedIn, right? So yeah, they go to LinkedIn. The way it does it is linkedin.com/in/RichardJamesMoore, M-O-O-R-E, all one word. Or there's therichardmoore.com website, and there's all of my channels on there. But yeah, happy to connect with people on LinkedIn. Any more questions about it? It's my Netflix, spending time in the comments and helping people out. So no problem at all. And thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome. So it's therichardmoore.com or linkedin.com/Richard.
Yeah, it's weird. So linkedin.com, and before everyone's name, it's this. There's in slash. So it's linkedin.com/in/RichardJamesMoore.
Got it. Excellent. You heard it first here. So check him out. He knows what he's doing. He's disciplined. He's structured. He's specialized in LinkedIn and helping people to get sales and attract clients from that. So utilize him, pick his brains, work with him. I trust him wholeheartedly. Hence the reason why I got hold of him, because when you share a background with someone from over 15 years ago, you know what they're all about. And anyone who is running their business at the same time has the notion of, how do I look after my health? How do I look after myself? How do I take care of my family? How do I continue as an entrepreneur? And how do I live a wholesome life so that in latter years, I have no regrets? I trust that person. If it's all about money, what about the other side of life? And he embraces the same values as I do. So Richard, on that note, I want to say thank you very much. And much blessings for you to do what you're doing and continue helping as many people around the world as you are doing. So
thank you.
I want to say thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciated it. And I hope we can do it again sometime.
Well, hopefully so. So you take care. Have a great day. Have a great week. And then we'll catch up very soon, Richard. Okay.
Thank you. Cheers.
You're welcome.